How should we deal with Red China? What will be the Republican position on Vietnam? What course can the Republicans follow to win at the polls this fall? From Washington, the American Broadcasting Company brings you Issues and Answers. Our guests, Republican Senator Thurston B. Morton of Kentucky and Republican Senator Hugh Scott of Pennsylvania, two former GOP chairmen. Here to interview Senators Morton and Scott, ABC News commentator Edward P. Morgan and ABC News White House correspondent Frank Reynolds.
Gentlemen, you're both former chairmen of the Republican Party and vitally interested in its future. Can you tell us what is the major assault and the most politically potent charge you can make this year on the Johnson administration and the Democratic Party? Senator Scott?
I think the utter failure to manage the cost of living will be tremendously important. The inflation, which moves from creeping to walking and fearsomely to running inflation ultimately, the multiplicity of remedies without solutions for the problem of the housewife, the worker, the attempt to make the pay envelope stretch in accordance with the continuing growth of government cost, the rise in state and local taxes contributing, I think it'll be a tremendous issue and tremendously important. Republicans have usually gained voter confidence through a greater responsibility in managing the monetary affairs of government, and I think that will give us some advantages.
Do you, we infer from that, then, that Vietnam is not really the basic issue?
In Vietnam, the basic issue is to find a way to peace honorably and with an honorable settlement, and then to get out. I think the Republicans have shown remarkable responsibility in the fact that no Republican in either House or Senate has sought to harass the president, to trip him, to take cheap advantages. Some have been critical of the Secretary of Defense. Others have been critical of phases of the war where there have been shortages or unfortunate lapses. But no Republican has said that he wants to second guess or to try to take over the strategic responsibility which only the Commander-in-Chief, the President, can manage. And this is not true of the President's own party, where roughly one-fourth to one-third of his party members in House and Senate are continually finding means to criticize, to draw away from the President his time and his efforts and force him to defend himself at home when all of us want him to be pursuing the cause of peace.
Let's give Senator Morton equal time to answer that question, but if I may, Senator, I'd like to narrow it in this fashion. Where is the President, in your opinion, making the most mistakes in any area that you choose?
All right, on the domestic field first, I agree with Senator Scott that the issue, the broad issue of inflation will be the biggest issue. And we're not measuring up to it. We talk one day about higher interest rates, the next day about a possible tax increase, this, that, or the other, but we merely talk. There are local domestic issues in the farm community, depending on what crop or what type of livestock or what not, there seems to be disaffection. But the main issue, which could well be Vietnam if things stay as they are today, would be the lack of confidence of the American people in a unified leadership. Now, the Democrats had the enormous victory of 64. They control the Congress 2-1. And as I get around the country, people are saying they don't seem to know how to prosecute this. Even the doves and the hawks, regardless of what their particular feeling is, their distrust is, their lack of confidence is that here is a party which went into power with an overwhelming majority, which controls both houses of the Congress, and all the lack of purpose that we see is a result of internecine contests within that party.
And you're pinpointing the schism within the party basically on Vietnam, are you not?
Well, it happens in the Dominican Republic. There are a lot of people that don't think we've been sufficiently aggressive in preventing the disarray in NATO. It's in other places. Naturally, with casualties occurring daily, Vietnam is on the minds of the people. But we shouldn't, because of that, sweep our other responsibilities under the rug. All of this adds up, I think, to show a lack of cohesion in this party. They talked about disunity in the Republican Party. To me, it's more seriously manifest today than I've ever seen it in the Democratic Party. And that, coupled with the normal off-year swings that you get, indicate to me that we're going to pick up substantial seats.
What puzzles me most, and I'd like, if you can, both of you to answer this, on the business of the issue of Vietnam, since the Republicans as a whole, or perhaps even individually, with the possible exception of ex-Senator Goldwater, have not come up with any specific alternative that they want the president to do. I thought that the president last week at the Democratic fundraising dinner reached out and tried to make Vietnam the issue for him, in a sense saying, you're with me or you're against me.
But specifically we have. Now, on December the 13th, the Republican Coordinating Committee, which I think speaks for the Republican Party as much as any group could, which includes Senator Goldwater, General Eisenhower, Mr. Nixon, Governor Dewey, the leadership in the House and Senate, five governors selected by the governors, Governor Smiley of Idaho, Governor Rockefeller of New York, they're on this group. They recommended then that we adopt a Kennedy-type quarantine, that we cut off the oil for North Vietnam, 90% of it coming in by sea, that we interdict that oil. We don't have to stop food and medicine. We don't have to go the whole hog. We don't have to go a complete blockade. Here was a specific that was recommended by a group that speaks for the Republican Party. And here, General Taylor, 2 months later, backed this up. And I thought then that must have been with White House clearance. I thought, now we're finally going to stop this oil before it gets there, not send these kids flying 250 and 300 feet trying to knock out a 1,500-gallon truck when we're letting 5-million-gallon tankers come in by sea. I think we have been specific in this, and I think the people realize it.
Yeah, the Republican Party has been, I said, thoroughly responsible in supporting the president, but we have proposed consistently means to expedite the peace. And how do you expedite the peace? You interdict, you prevent the entry into the harbor of Haiphong of the 45 vessels that were in there, 46 vessels, last month, 39 of which, I'm told, were British. You have to say to our allies, now you've got to either fish or cut bait. We can't continue to send aid to various nations. And then see Liberian, British, Cuban, Greek, and other vessels come in there carrying the supplies of war, and including oil. I have consistently said that we should interdict the harbor of Haiphong. We can do it by mines dropped from planes. We can do it by bombing only military targets rather than civilians. I have not been in the forefront of people who say to the president how he must bomb a given target. We have said, we Republicans, that the way to save lives is to stop the enemy from having weapons, because the less the enemy has either the weapons or the mobility given by oil, the less Americans and Koreans and Vietnamese he can kill. Therefore, we are in a solid position of advocating and expediting the movement toward peace, and I think the people of this country are pretty well aware of that.
Well, it would seem, Senator, that perhaps you're going to have the best of both worlds. You're going to go to the country
and point to the... But this isn't our fault. This isn't the way we laid it out.
Well, you're going to point to the disarray among the Democrats, and you're going to cite your support of the president's Vietnam policy, and at the same time, you can attack him for not prosecuting the war more vigorously.
But, Frank, I'm sorry to take this time through, and I yield right away. But we are not the people who are responsible for Senator Morse and Fulbright, Senator Church, and others continually chewing away at the president. This is the initiative they took. We take the position that you should not so harass the president. Therefore, we are not responsible for the dilemma in which the president finds himself. You're saying to us, well, this may benefit you. Of course, any fault, any failure of the Democratic Party to operate the government, especially in time of war, is apt to cause the people of the country to say, let's give the other party a chance.
Senator Morton, both you and Senator Scott held your distance and did not embrace many policies that Senator Goldwater advocated in 1964. But today, both of you seem to be, by implication, endorsing his advocacy of striking at Hanoi and Haiphong. Am I right?
Well, speaking for myself, I certainly worked hard for Senator Goldwater, and I campaigned in the states which had Senate races, and that was about 30 states that I worked hard in and supported him fully throughout the campaign, and I want that point abundantly clear. Now, he wants the same thing, I think, that we want. As I've talked to him recently, he perhaps would go a little farther in bombing or in a total blockade. I say let's try first a selective blockade. Let's cut off the oil. This doesn't disturb me on the risk of escalation. We talk about British vessels and these others. Well, that's the British flag. They may have no control over that vessel. Indeed, the British flag and the Liberian flag, the Panamanian flag, and others are very loosely granted. But we are in full agreement that we must have a peace with honor, that we can't just pull out. On this fundamental, we agree, and on this fundamental, the Republicans that have spoken out support the President of the United States. We feel that the risk of escalation will be diminished the sooner we can get it over with. You've got 250,000 men there. That's a risk of escalation. Let's get it over with. So let's put in an interdiction of the supplies that are being used against them. And finally, I think we all agree that we will never bring this to an end until the North Koreans realize they can't win. North Vietnamese. Yeah. We talk about this business of total victory. That's not why we're over there. We're over there to stop them. Once they're convinced they can't win, then they'll sit down and talk meaningfully, and this matter can be worked out. I was an officer in the State Department at the time of Panmunjom. We suffered with the rocks 90,000 casualties after we started talking because they didn't think we meant it. Once they thought we meant it, that we were going to stand firm, the whole problem of the exchange of prisoners just fell into, in a question of 2 or 3 weeks, it all fell into place.
Senator Scott, Senator Goldwater rather aggressively advocated total victory on another network today. Where do you stand on that in lieu of in view of Senator Morton's statement?
Well, I don't advocate that we should use words without a public understanding what we mean and without ourselves understanding. And I don't know what Senator Goldwater means by a total victory. What I think is important is to secure an honorable settlement. Total victory might be capturing the whole continent of China. Of Asia, I certainly can't see that. A total victory might mean war to ultimate death and extinction of the opposition. I can't see that. I speak in terms of an honorable settlement where the enemy, the aggressor, learns, as the Secretary of State has said, that he must stop doing what he is doing before we stop doing what we are doing, and that is to make it impossible for him to capture, by aggression, a free, independent country. Now, my difference with Senator Goldwater, perhaps, would be that I don't adhere to a view I thought he was pointing to about commanders in the field making
strategic decisions,
such as bombing the capital of the enemy. I think that has to be in the commander-in-chief. I would not talk so freely about loosing nuclear terror on any nation, on the Chinese or on anyone else. They are human beings, too. And certainly I wouldn't do it unless they engaged not merely in an opportunity that gave us a chance to do it, but unless they engaged in warfare against United States forces. So that many things President Johnson has done are among those things which Senator Goldwater advocated during the campaign. In all candor, we must remember that.
Speaking of strategic decisions, we've got a very, very serious situation in South Vietnam today. Da Nang is in a miniature state of civil war. Given that situation, what would you advocate that President Johnson do?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to give any advice to President Johnson today or to speak out on this until the situation gels a bit. Unfortunately, there is political instability in South Vietnam, and this is a factor that may cause us to take decisions or positions or pursue policies 6 months from now that maybe we don't want to, but we may not have a choice. The whole thing is so up in the air that I don't know. I hope that we find a government there that is responsive sufficiently to the people to give them the hope and the purpose to prosecute this effort against aggression.
And as I see it, these people are inexperienced in government. They're inexperienced in the whole matter of South Vietnamese, a free government. And Premier Khai at times seems impulsive and doesn't always take advice. But I still have the feeling that underlying all of this is a fight for internal control of the government after the free elections are held, and that none of these people are fighting as between communists and anti-communists. I think that most of these people are fighting among themselves, anti-communists, nearly all of them. Of course the communists try to infiltrate one group or another, like the Buddhists. But we ought to remember that mostly they're all fighting to say who is to be in charge of driving the communists out of the country. And as long as they adhere to that, I don't go with the people who say, well, if they can't agree among themselves, we ought to pull out. If that's the case, we can't agree among ourselves on the Foreign Relations Committee, and that isn't any excuse for the president to pull out.
Well, you both say you don't wish to harass the president in time of war, but at the same time, you have your responsibility to oppose. Now, is the president not vulnerable on this question of political instability in South Vietnam? Are we right in supporting Premier Khi as we did so vigorously at Honolulu?
Well, that may have been a mistake. I mean, history may prove that was a great mistake, to build him up as he was built up in Honolulu. This may have had a bad reaction at home, in his home, in South Vietnam. This I don't know. But the point that I make is that we are not, as a party, going to attack him on matters of this kind. We're going to basically support him in the strong policy there. We're going to point out, as the loyal opposition and a responsible, I hope, opposition, suggestions where we think we can help bring this thing to an honorable close quickly, regardless of the political situation. I think the political situation would die. I think it would at least calm down if the people realized that there is, in fact, a pacification of the country.
Well, I think there's always an implication on this type of program that the Republicans are harvesting some kind of a sneaky advantage they shouldn't, that we have the best of all possible worlds. If we do, it is only because at the moment the Democratic administration happens to have the worst of all possible worlds, and a very serious dilemma, and I think it's fair to say. But Republicans are not being hypocritical.
Let's get into some of your problems. Senator Goldwater has just said that Senator Javits was very wrong indeed if he thought that the basic makeup of the Republican National Convention in 68 was going to be any different than 64. Now, 64 resulted in an election debacle that is historic. What is your dual reaction to that situation?
I'll say this, that the framework of the party is such that your delegates come pretty much from the same sources. In some states, it's done through the precinct convention leading to a county convention and then a state convention. In others, it is through a primary system. And in that case, of course, the personality of the candidates involved has some bearing in their personal following, of course. But I think that we will have a responsible convention, and I trust it leads to the nomination of a successful candidate.
You're an ex-chairman of the party,
Senator
too.
Well, Senator Morton and I both had experiences in national conventions, and we know the interplay there, and I think this is the sort of thing that happens. Whereas in the 52 convention, in the contest between Senator Taft and General Eisenhower, the contest was over who could best serve the people of this country, who could best serve the party, through somewhat different points of view. General Eisenhower prevailed, was elected, and served 8 years. In 64, the contest was not so much how can we serve the people or how much can we serve the party, but how can we serve a given ideology, which was conservatism, moving pretty far to the right. And that ideology is one which the people of the United States have long since decided they will not accept. The people of this country move generally down the broad middle highway. And for both political parties to move down the general center The Republican Party a little to the right of that center mostly. I'm not speaking of individual. The Democratic Party a little to the left of that center. That spectrum embraces 90% of the American people. In so doing, we give the people a genuine choice between two candidates, each of whom has his own idea of serving the people. And I think through affirmative solutions, positive programs, and courageous candidates, we can win not only big in 1966 in Congress, but we have a chance, an honest, reasonable chance, of electing a president.
If I read you correctly, you are completely contradicting Senator Goldwater's projection of a same kind of convention in 68.
Yes, I would say God forbid. I'm a little bit less reserved or cautious than a lot of my friends, but I would say God forbid. I would not want again to go through that trauma or that debacle, and I don't think the Republican Party deserves that kind of treatment. By all means, let's have Senator Goldwater's friends there, and let's have Richard Nixon, whom we like, and who has done a great party service. Let him have his delegates there, and let Romney or Scranton or Hatfield or whoever they may be. But let's not fight this thing out on who can be the right of whom. Let's fight it out on who can serve the American people best, and in so doing, serve the party best.
Senator Morton, who is out front in the race for the Republican presidential nomination in 68, and is he your favorite?
Well, I don't think anyone is out front today, and I don't think Republicans are thinking about 68 very properly. They're thinking of 66. The personalities that emerge, the leaders that emerge in 66 will be the potential candidates for 68. And I'm happy to see this. For once, we're concentrating on this 66 off-year election without all of the difficulties that you get into when you're looking 2 years down the road. For indeed, if we don't make substantial gains in 66, perhaps there won't be so many seeking this job in 68.
The time runs. Senator Scott, the Republican Party today is in a worse state of disarray than it was the morning after in November 64. True or false?
Well, false. I agree with what Senator Morton has said. Important that we elect Republican senators and more of them, and Republican congressmen and more of them. And this is what we should primarily be talking about. The framework of your questions required us to mention names, but the important thing is that the Republican Party, as the party of responsibility, should answer the need of this country for a strong and workable two-party system. We can do it by being responsible, respectable, and honorable.
Gentlemen, we've covered a lot of territory more superficially than we all would like. Thank you both, Senator Morton and Senator Scott, for being with us today on Issues and Answers.
Our guests this week have been Republican Senators Thurston B. Morton of Kentucky and Hugh Scott of Pennsylvania. They were interviewed by ABC News commentator Edward P. Morgan and ABC News White House correspondent Frank Reynolds. Next week at this same time, Issues and Answers will bring you Madam Chiang Kai-shek, First Lady of Nationalist China, wife of Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek. We hope you'll be with us. Issues and Answers is produced by Peggy Wheaton, a presentation of ABC News.